Welcome on to a Wednesday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. We had Seth Partnow on about a week and a half ago to talk about Summer League. As you might expect with two lawyers, we were quite verbose and we didn't make it through everyone. So I wanted to bring him back and hopefully we can finish our discussion talking about some of these prospects. What's up, Seth?
How's it going? How are you doing tonight?
I am better because I'm looking at your Skype profile picture right now and you kind of have this just like... I wouldn't say a smirk. It's almost just a kind of condescending, like, pursing of the lips in which I'm just imagining you discussing, or just, like, watching a bad charge call or something. it's really an excellent photograph, and maybe I should – can I screenshot it and share it on Twitter?
That's fine. Yeah, it's
– Too much of an invasion of privacy? All right. Stay tuned on Twitter. We'll see the visage of Seth that I am looking at right now. He looks really displeased with clearly something that's happened in the NBA world. So I want to leave it till the end this time. You've been writing a lot of good stuff lately. Plug it. I mean, that rim protection one, I haven't had a chance to read yet. What's that about?
Kelly Scaletta was asking me about how KJ McDaniels, if he was a big man, would rank on the metric. And so it's something I've done before, but hadn't really posted anywhere. So I kind of went back and looked at positional averages for everyone in the league above a certain minute threshold. And comparing it to positional averages, I think makes sense just because position in the NBA is defined kind of by who you guard. So, you know, the rim protection value of the two big guys is comparable across teams versus the two wings across teams versus the point guard is kind of how I broke it down and just kind of looked at it that way. It's on Nylon Calculus. And if one is wanting to be super nerdy about it, I messed with the formula a little bit because I wasn't happy with how it was handling people who were kind of close to the average. I thought it was giving the wrong players it was giving too much of an edge to players who contested a lot of shots versus players who contested shots well. So that's
so obviously it's an apples and oranges comparisons, smalls and bigs.
Yes.
Because you know smalls are coming from a different place than bigs are. But I've long kind of maintained that even if you're a small player, if you can get there and jump, you can have an effect on a guy's shot a lot more than necessarily you might think. And, you know, we've talked about that, I think, in the context of how we feel like the charge rule needs to be reformed a little bit, where people say, oh, if you're a little guy, what can you do? I actually think if you're a little guy, jumping can really help. Did your data reflect that, or do you think I'm kind of way off there?
No, I think that's about right. Versus it's not a ton of points, for a small, the average small, just because, like you say, they don't get there as much. But still, it's, you know, the wings kind of getting to that point it's worth, you know, between both wings on average, this is the average, so this is what I'm comparing the numbers to, is worth probably about 5 points a game you're saving just by having, you know, those guys kind of be there and be in the way. So that's, you know, not nothing. That's certainly better than, you know, those, you know, couple shots that they are contesting being uncontested at the rim. So absolutely there's some value to be had. And there's, I think a decent range of value between kind of the guys like KJ McDaniels, Danny Green, Kyle Korver actually shows up pretty well on it. And some of the worst guys who are, you know, some of the folks that you'd expect, kind of the smaller, less defensively inclined Jamal Crawford types.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that, too, is just because some guys will jump and some guys won't. You know, I mean, I think that kind of that makes a difference. I mean, whether you try, even if, you know, you think you're not, maybe you won't make that big of a difference, but you can. Anyway, all right, so let's get on to the real purpose here, which is talking more about some of the guys that we haven't gotten to in Summer League yet. Why don't we start with Boston? I, for one, was very impressed with what Marcus Smart was able to do. What do you think?
Again, the second-year guy is the toughest guy, in many ways, the toughest guy to evaluate at Summer League because you're expecting them to especially a guy who, you know, got big rotation minutes the year before. So that said, obviously he was, you know, almost physically overwhelming a lot of summer league competition. And
in what way?
He's just big and strong. Like there was a couple times, and I don't remember who, but some smaller guard for another team was trying to bring the ball up the floor, and he was just, it was like they had unleashed the Kraken on him. He just almost enveloped him, and the poor guy was never seen again. So that's the kind of stuff where his kind of sheer physical dominance shows up at summer league. The other stuff, shooting is whatever. He's probably taking shots you wouldn't necessarily want him taking games. He didn't shoot the ball.
Yeah, he kind of did that during his rookie year, though.
Yeah, no, that was the weird thing about his rookie year is how, and this is probably a function of, you know, Boston playing Rondo and then Isaiah Thomas a lot, is he ended up, you know, being almost a spot-up shooter for much of his first year, which is odd considering the knock on him remains his shooting. Again, it's hard to say how much of that physical dominance of being able to get where he wanted to on the floor at summer league will translate. But, you know, it's obviously better for him to be physically dominant than not as a second-year player. Wasn't Jordan Clarkson level of impressive, but again, how much could we tell from what Jordan Clarkson did?
Well, there are a few things that I found very encouraging for Smart. Number one was that he showed some skills that he didn't necessarily show during the regular year this year. It may have been partially because he had that pretty gruesome ankle injury early on, but what made him such an alluring prospect coming out of Oklahoma State, other than his physicality and his defense, was his ability to get to the basket, finish at the rim, and then find people in pick and roll. And he really never got to the basket at all, partially I think because he was playing off the ball the way you said he was. But he was able to do that in summer league, especially in the Utah summer league. And I saw him up close. He really dominated that Thursday that I was there. Didn't quite play. And then I think the first game in Vegas, and then he kind of dropped off a little bit and then didn't play kind of towards the end. But so I thought that was very encouraging. I thought his jumper looked a lot better, especially off the dribble. His form is much better than it was when he was coming out of school. I don't know if you noticed this. He really tries to keep his guide hand straight now, where it used to be kind of like a thumber where he'd flick a little bit with his guide hand. So I thought that looked a lot better. He hit some pretty tough shots, just had some nice little operating plays, like cute little behind the backs to the screener and in pick and roll, stuff like that. So I just liked seeing him back being the point guard, the Oklahoma State guy running the show. It was good to see, at least in summer league, that he had that in him. So it gives me some optimism for the year coming forward that he can be a little bit more dynamic offensively than he can.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I think that's the stuff you need to see. And so that's kind of the baseline of, all right, he's got a chance to be okay this year, because those steps that you're talking about in terms of that, you know, getting into the little pockets in the defense and making plays is kind of the big jump from, you know, summer league year zero to after year one. And he did show that, so that's encouraging. I agree with you.
James Young, however, he did seem to be struggling kind of towards the end with some sort of a back injury or contusion. I never really got an idea of what that was, but he to me had a disappointing Utah and Vegas. The lefty, still not really much ability to go right, was not able to get all the way to the rim. He was taking some pretty long range floaters, didn't show a great ability even, you know, to shoot from outside. And I'm really a little bit worried about his career. He was a very young rookie. I think he was 18 still when he was drafted. But, you know, he's not looking that athletic. I think really to make a career for himself, he's going to have to be a very high 30s, up to 40% three-point shooter ultimately. I really saw very little to be encouraged by with him, unfortunately.
Yeah, and kind of you talked to some people kind of in and around the summer league, and there was concern was I'm worried was kind of the phrase that I heard a couple times discussing him, and just kind of what you're talking about, and then kind of, you know, also some unfortunate, you know, comments by him. And you don't want to, you know, kill an 18, 19 year old kid for not phrasing something the wrong way or the right way. But
What did he say?
I forget the exact, but it was something like, you know, my off. I'm concentrating some. Something to the effect of I'm not able to try as hard on offense because I'm working on D now or something like that. It was, you know.
Oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's.
So yeah, I mean, it's very difficult for me to imagine that it'll be in the rotation this year with some of the other options that they have.
The 92 guards they have.
Yeah, I mean, and even at small forward, they could maybe use a little bit more help. You know, I can't think of what the reason would be to play him right now, and they have plenty of other prospects too. One of whom is R.J. Hunter. After a rough start shooting the ball in Utah, he actually got it going offensively.
Yeah, I think he's closer. I mean, obviously he's older than even though he's a rookie, he's older. He's also, I think, closer to ready. He needs to get stronger. But I mean, as a stand there and shoot, he can do that, and that's encouraging. But I think the physical side of the NBA game is going to take a little bit for him to catch on to, and that's, I think, especially going to show up defensively where. I think any kind of screen action is just going to obliterate him at the start of this coming year. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And it's also could be hard for him to get minutes as well. He's really probably cannot defend most threes with the body that he has. I mean, I thought he did a pretty good job competing, staying in front, you know, and so if he can add a little bit of mass or at least some core strength, that he could kind of get to be a more wiry guy who can get around screens. But I was just encouraged with the shooting. I mean, he looked, everyone's like, oh yeah, he shot so poorly, but you know, he clearly was taking bad shots as the man at Georgia State. And his shot was effortless from well beyond the NBA 3-point line, even, which that's an adjustment that a lot of guys coming out of college can struggle with for at least a year or so. He looked like he's going to have no problem there. As summer league went on and Smart started to play less, they even put the ball in his hands more in pick and roll. He's kind of a better passer than a lot of these pure gunner types. Has a little bit of off the dribble game, so I was actually pretty encouraged by at least his shooting. And he looks like someone that, you know, you're going to have to guard all over the court, and a guy who can spot up, you know, at least 2-3 feet behind the line, which is a valuable skill.
Sure, and you know, we talk about the physical stuff. You know, no disrespect to Georgia State, but I think that's just getting into a better program, certainly professional program will probably help him a lot there. So I think that you can probably say that he hasn't necessarily been maximized on that front so far. You know, again, it's probably a difference between just the level of kind of facilities and training at a smaller mid-major school versus kind of a BCS power conference type school. So I think that would be a cause for optimism, I guess.
Quickly, how would you compare him to Kevin Martin at a similar stage of his career? That's the one that pops up to me. Obviously, Kevin Martin turned into be a wonderful player, 20-point scorer. I don't think that we can necessarily predict that, but there are some similarities in their game.
It's so hard to compare anyone to Kevin Martin just because the first thing you think of is his funky jump shot. So, but that's not, I think Martin is maybe taller, but not as long, if I'm remembering, because if I remember correctly, Martin doesn't have a great wingspan. So that's slightly different body types, I guess. But that's not an awful kind of comparison. It's a matter of if Hunter can kind of develop kind of that little bit of a junky game that's helped Martin really draw fouls for a lot of his career, which kind of turned him from a shooter into a scorer.
Yeah, you know, on the surface it's a comparison that makes sense. They both went to small schools. Martin went to Western Carolina. They're skinny and they have sort of funky jumpers. Obviously, Hunter's is not nearly as funky. I do think that Martin, especially when he was younger, had a little bit more bounce, a little more ability to get to the basket than Hunter does. I might even say that Hunter is a better pure shooter than Martin at this stage of his career. But, you know, just something to kind of think about, especially since they have similar body types. I did like Hunter's ability to compete on defense, I think, a little bit better than Martin at this stage. But last one, not someone that I had seen a ton of or had much of an opinion on coming in, was Terry Rozier. I still don't really have that much of an opinion of him other than he just, you know, was an athletic guy. Didn't see that many games of him since I just watched most of the Celtics games I watched were in the Utah Summer League where he didn't play as much. But give me your thoughts on him real quick.
I'm still kind of a little bit scratching my head. That I think everyone was kind of wondering about that pick at the start, and I'm still, you know, wondering about it. I'm trying to figure out what he projects as an NBA player. He seems almost the classic undersized two, a little bit. I don't know about his distribution, but he's strong and athletic. But he's strong and athletic and small, and so you just you wonder, unless you're, you know, Eric Bledsoe athletic, if that's going to prevent him from, as you like to term it, that's going to prevent him from playing up. Like, I think he would need to even, you know, get rotation minutes anytime soon.
Yeah, to me, his career is going to rise or fall on his jump shot, and you know, he does have a pretty big wingspan. He's has that 6'8" wingspan. So maybe you could play up defensively, pretty strong body. But, yeah, I mean, if he's not going to be able to hit a jump shot and an NBA three-point jump shot, it's hard to imagine him having that much of a career. But he does have the physical tools.
Yes.
So maybe that's what Boston is thinking with picking him.
And thinking best-case scenario, he and Smart don't not make sense as a backcourt together. I mean, if they both develop, like, if, you know, you squint your eye, like taking the skepticism about his development aside, if you know, giving Boston the benefit of the doubt that what they see, that they saw in him is real, like, okay, you know, maybe his, you know, he guards some points and Smart guards some twos, and, but Smart jumper still a work in progress, and maybe Rozier plays off the ball a little bit, and it kind of works in kind of a mix and match sort of way. That's the, you know, if one was going to put a positive spin on it, that's what it would be, I guess.
Yeah. As an aside though, we're starting to see some of the limitations now of Boston's strategy, because all those picks are great, but then when you start having to use them all inevitably, and now a lot of the appeal of that is you just have more lottery tickets to find a star potentially, or to find a really high level player. But you also get to the point that once those picks get used, a lot of those guys, whether it's Young, probably Rozier this year, I mean, they've got Bradley, they've got Smart, they've got Isaiah Thomas. Hard to imagine Rozier getting any minutes at all this year. And with that being the case, you know, his value is going to go down. You know, there's no way that after this year, someone would trade him, would accept him in trade for the 16th pick, right?
Like, no.
Because he's not going to play it all this year. I mean, unless he just kills it in the D League or something, and someone has good scouts who are going to be all over him, you know, your assets are going to decline. I forget who it was who made this statement, but it's kind of like driving the new car off the lot. If the guy's not going to get enough minutes to show something, he's really going to decline in value compared to just where he was picked even a year ago. And, you know, of course, you've used up now a year of his cheap rookie contract. So some of the limitations with Boston, I mean, I think if I were a team who wanted to make some deals, that looking at maybe a team like Boston or Phoenix that has more of these young guys and they know what to do with, and who they're starting to worry that maybe they'll get a little bit expensive, they're getting towards the end of their rookie contracts, maybe you try and make a move for those guys as a buy low opportunity.
Yeah, no, Phoenix was the other team that I was going to use in this example, and kind of a guy like Archie Goodwin is you know, he's going into his third year now, and we still don't really know what he can do other than, you know, he's intriguing, but he's been intriguing in short spurts now for his whole career because of what you just said of being kind of completely blocked from playing time. And, you know, it's an odd situation where you have kind of such flat, deep talent where, you know, you might, and I think they tried to do this. They tried to, you know, their proposed trade to Charlotte, I think, on any kind of absolute scale of value would have been a loss for them, but it would have been just consolidating from, you know, 16 assets to 11 would have to get one better asset would have been, overall positive for the team. But then that only works if, you know, if you go to the store and they won't take your money, what's your money worth? Is kind of the situation they found themselves in.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, so you mentioned Phoenix. That's a good team to get to next. Celtics West, as I call them. Let's talk about Alex Len very briefly. I mean, I think he did what he was supposed to do, you know, as a third-year guy, fifth pick, a guy who started at times. I mean, and there's nobody really in the summer league who has the level of size and experience to keep up with him. And, you know, he wasn't killing in the low post or anything, but did well blocking shots and rebounding and helping that Phoenix team, you know, do well in the summer league. Anything else you wanted to add on him at all?
No, it's not an environment where a guy of his skill set is ever going to wow anyway. But like you said, you know, did what he came to do, and you know that is what it is. And the fact that he's a third year guy as the fifth overall pick playing in summer league isn't the best thing, but. But that's
well. I wouldn't like impugn him for that, for just wanting to go and get better. And he could even have a incentive in his contract that requires for him to do that or ask him to do that. But let's get to the guy who I think I might like just about better than any of the sophomores who actually played. And I mean, don't hold me to that because I've gone through the entire list. But T.J. Warren, I thought was fantastic again. In summer league, but you know he is also kind of a guy who has to have the ball in his hands. Not a great shooter, good at cutting to the basket, so he can play off others in that respect. Do you think that he can carve out a rotation role in Phoenix this year?
I don't totally agree with one thing you said there, which is that he needs the ball in his hands. I think part of his, you know, certainly his and Jonathan. I'm sorry if I'm going to mispronounce his name. Charks, is it?
Tarks,
yeah.
From Real Jam,
wrote a nice piece about T.J. Warren earlier this week, and you know talked about how you know as a freshman he was the fifth guy on a good team, and you know scored 12 a game on like 65% shooting, just being a garbage man, and you know to go way back in the Suns archives, that's a, you know, maybe a little Cedric Ceballos kind of going on there, where you know if he can just you know be intelligent off the ball and find good spots and kind of be a junky scorer, you know that maybe has some value. It's not really an archetype we see too much anymore, just because everyone wants to space the floor and shoot the three. But that's kind of that's more his game at this point, I think, than necessarily being a guy who you know you feed the ball to, just because you know where is he on the pecking order in Phoenix for that to actually happen.
I did try to account for that a little bit with the talk of his cutting.
Yeah.
But it's going to be tough because it's not a team that has a ton of shooting. That would kind of work a little bit better in a more space floor with his cuts. I mean, I certainly think that he can score just fine. He's not going to kill the offense or anything. But I will say this, that this might be somewhat of a deceiving performance because he was playing the four and being guarded most of the time by like true fours on the other team who just didn't have a prayer of keeping up with him either in transition or off the dribble. So, you know, I'm not sure that he can hold up really as a small ball forward defensively and on the boards the way he would really need to. So I think he's going to have to be a three at least most of the time. And I still think he can be effective that way, but to, you know, he wasn't really like picking on someone his own size, at least from a skill and speed standpoint in the summer league.
Yeah, and he did kind of the same thing last year where he put up big summer league numbers on kind of, you know, as kind of almost a junk baller, to use a baseball analogy. And those are kind of, those are some of, again, hard guys to evaluate at summer league where just that little bit of craftiness is unusual enough that it gets it done at summer league and you wonder how it'll translate. But, you know, maybe he gets another better look this year, and maybe he can, you know, put some of that those unusual skills to work at the actual NBA level.
Yeah, I mean, the dude just makes the ball go in the basket, whether it's floaters, finishing at the rim. There's a skill for that. I mean, and even if he's not going to be necessarily running a pick and roll, I think he can be effective attacking out of a secondary action after the ball is swung. If he gets a little bit of an advantage, he can get to the rim and really force pretty severe help because of his floater enables it that he can make is going to force you to help a little bit further out from right at the rim.
Or, you know, he can make that shot. So I think he could be pretty good. Like, the guy is just a natural scorer. I thought that he was pretty undervalued at 14. And granted, he didn't play at all last year, but he killed it in Bakersfield in the D-League, and I'm excited to see what he can do this year. How about Archie Goodwin? A guy who was the youngest guy in the draft, basically, 2 years ago. He and Giannis, didn't turn 19 until, like, well into the year. Still a pretty young dude, you know, basically 20 years old, even though he's been in the league for 2 years now. Do you think there's any chance he turns into a quality player, or have you not really liked what you've seen from him that much?
It's just we haven't seen enough from him. Like, not you know, seen.
He has some skills, yeah, though, right? Or at least some potential skills. Like, he's athletic. You know, he's sort of – so I would compare him a little bit to, like, an Alec Burks type, you know, maybe even a little bit more athletic right at the basket than Burks, but maybe even a worse jump shot at this point than Burks. But he's really young, and his jumper did look a little better to me.
Yeah, no, and he's, again, a guy who, you know, his third year in the league and put up numbers and did things at Summer League, and of course you should do that. But he almost a little bit in the way he was getting baskets was sort of the same way as Zach LaVine was. It's just like, okay, I'm more athletic than you, so I'm going to rise up and shoot over you, and you can't do anything, and it's going in, so tough. And that's great at Summer League, but then you just wonder about that translating. And again, you just wonder about him, kind of like the guys in Boston. You know, where is the chance for him to carve out consistent minutes to even, you know, demonstrate whether he has NBA skill level? And that's worrisome, I think.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he can get to the basket. You know, doesn't appear to be the headiest guy, the best passer. You know, I mean, I think his real future is, you know, that he has a near kind of point guard-like handle as a shooting guard, and then the ability to get to the basket and hopefully finish. But he's going to need a lot more refinement to his game still, and hopefully, you know, I would imagine even seeing him playing in the D-League again, although this year a little bit. So we'll see what happens with him, but I still think he has some potential. I mean, for a guy who I think was the number, like, 27 pick or something in 2013, you know, I'm not ready to foreclose on him yet. How about Devin Booker? What do you see from him?
I was – the first couple times I saw them, I was very unimpressed by him because he was like, if you hadn't told me he was, you know, a lottery pick, a late lottery pick on the floor, I would never have guessed it. Partially, that
were you there for that game when he had 31 points?
I was there, and I'm getting to that. So the first couple, like, and it's again, it's his skill set as, you know, primarily a, you know, spot up shooter. He's dependent on other people, you know, sharing the ball, making plays for him, and with, you know, Warren and Goodwin on the floor, there wasn't a lot of sharing going on. So
sure.
It was not necessarily the easiest for him to show up, and he didn't, you know, he didn't shoot the ball great. And if you're there to do one thing and you don't do that thing well, then it doesn't look good. But then, you know, later in the summer league, as he got more time, things started to happen for him, and you kind of, you know, saw the fact that, you know, a pure jump shot and a big athletic body is, you know, you could do worse. Maybe not ever going to be a star, but a guy who can, you know, if things go right, kind of fit into that prototypical 3-and-D mold.
Yeah, for him, I thought he looked the part as a shooter. He struggled a little bit early, but he wasn't having bad misses. His misses looked good, and he's able to get his shot off pretty well. Unlike you, I had some concerns about him athletically coming out of Kentucky, and I didn't think he looked awesome, but he at least, you know, he looked like he was about average for a shooting guard, maybe a little bit below, but, you know, could potentially improve that. Another super young guy, youngest guy in the draft. I don't think he turns 19 until October, so another kind of interesting pick there for the Suns, getting a super young guy. But I just like the fact that he looked just fine shooting the NBA three, and just, you know, if he can be a real good shooter and not be overwhelmed athletically, that's you got something there, especially when you consider how young he is. So I'm feeling higher about him, higher on him now after Summer League than I did before.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I'm higher or not. I think I saw about what I was expecting to see from him.
All right. Well, I mean, that's not terrible for a guy who was the number 13 pick. All right. Who else should we get to here? Why don't we get to some of the guys in Orlando? I know you didn't get to see that much of Stanley Johnson, so I'll just talk about him real quick. I think that he, the comparison that I always gave for him was Ron Artest. I thought that he was very kind of spot on with that as a guy who was 6'7", had that 245-pound body, really competes hard defensively. I've heard a lot of people say that maybe, you know, he kind of waxes and wanes defensively, and maybe that's true, but every time I've seen him up close, he's really competed. He's got great hands, gets a lot of steals. I think he can ultimately, you know, maybe not be a stopper on point guards and, you know, real quick shooting guards who like to work off the dribble, but he could be a good option on power wings. Also could work very well as a small ball four. And he was able to, his jump shot looks really good. He's really sped up his release. He's got like a nice hop now. And also was able to get to the basket reasonably well, finish reasonably well. That was kind of the big black mark on him at Arizona, but maybe the additional spacing in the NBA will help him there. So very encouraging Orlando Summer League for him. And, you know, I thought he looked better than Justice Winslow did. And so at least for now, Detroit looking okay, despite kind of eschewing conventional wisdom and going with him over Winslow. And I think Detroit may actually have something in terms of two-way guys on the wing with him and Caldwell Pope if both those guys can develop. They're just aren't that many of those two-way guys in the wings, especially in the Eastern Conference.
Sure, yeah. I think I didn't see very much of him, but like you said, but, you know, if he showed good things, then he certainly showed more than I kind of saw from Winslow. So,
yeah, well, let's get to him then. I take it from that you weren't particularly impressed with his performance. Let's start here first. Did you see him mostly in Vegas?
Mostly in Vegas.
Yeah, so he was better in Orlando and also just didn't play as much in Vegas. I mean, they had two additions, so that could be part of it. But still, you know, I mean, games are games. What did you see from him in Vegas?
You just worry about the jump shot, you know? That's
it. Yeah, I've heard from a number of people talking about that he really shot the ball pretty terribly in workouts.
Yeah, and just looking at it, it's a little bit herky jerky, a little bit slow release, and you worry, you know. It's he's not the biggest. He obviously plays you know, bigger than his height because of his length and athleticism, but still the margin for error for a non-shooter is pretty small in terms of ability to defend. And to be fair to him, I mean, the snippets I saw, I liked what I saw from him, you know, at least as an on-ball defender, but, you know, that's not enough, I don't think, to be what you're expecting him to be.
Well, I mean, are people really, I think of him as a pretty high floor guy just due to his body and the way he competes in the floor game. You know, I think he will be a solid, if not unbelievable, defender. You know, I think he could be more like a Wes Matthews type of defender than like a true lockdown guy necessarily. But, you know, someone who could contribute on the offensive glass, on fast breaks. I think he's going to be good. He's going to be a big superstar, but especially having seen him more in high school. Granted, he improved a lot in college, but I wasn't quite buying that, in part because I think he still has a ways to go on the jump shot. So that's I agree. You know, I didn't think it was a particularly damning performance by him, but nothing I'd probably feel a little bit worse about him coming out of this than I would have just like right out of college.
Well, I think the one thing about it is you know, after the draft, there were some comments made, you know, not to name names, about, you know, a guy like Porzingis getting taken over a guy who was, quote, ready to play like Winslow. And I think, if anything, this performance should kind of put the ready to play right.
He's a freshman. He's not ready to play.
Yeah. And
what is ready to play? Like, really ready to compete and play winning basketball for a playoff team? Like, no way. Like, there might be, like, you know, how many freshmen who came out after their freshman year, does that describe an NBA history?
Yeah.
10?
Well,
no, so I agree with you. It's not the idea of someone being ready to help this year is a very overblown.
I think even a guy like Booker would be more ready to help a good team than Winslow, just because Booker has that one skill that, okay, you know, you're going to play 10 minutes a game, stand in the corner, hit open jump shots, and play defense. And don't worry about anything else. And, you know, and a guy like Winslow doesn't even have that kind of that.
Yeah, I mean, he does bring the energy and the athleticism and competition. I mean, I think
he'll get minutes.
No,
I think he's playing 10, 15 minutes a game and helping. But we'll see, I guess. Let's get to some of the other big boys here real quick, but make sure we get through all of them. So you mentioned Porzingis.
Was this really your first time seeing much of him?
Yes.
What'd you think?
Oh, definitely further along than I expected.
In what way?
Moves well. You know, not.
So it was. Can I stop you right there? On moves well. And are you thinking moves well for like a center, or moves well for a power forward? Because I think as a center, maybe you can say that. As a power forward, I think he's pretty slow.
No, he's definitely not fast, but he's not. You know, Marc Gasol is a guy I'd say who moves well, and obviously that's for a center, but moves well in terms of kind of agility, you know, able to loosen the hips, just kind of the way I would describe it. He's not a stiff mover. So maybe he's not the fastest, but he's not a guy who has, you know, like a battleship like turning radius. That's very helpful. And obviously, the physicality was a problem for him, but it was less of a problem than I was expected. I don't think I saw him get just thrown out of the way at all, which I guess in retrospect shouldn't have been surprising since he's been playing against, you know, grown men for years.
Yeah.
I
think that the whole strength thing to me is the least of his problems.
Yeah.
I think he's going
to
get that one.
Yeah. And, you know, his willingness to mix it up was... This is something that a lot of, especially, you know, the Knicks writers obviously looking for all the positives, but, you know, his willingness to set a screen on someone, to hit someone coming across the lane, to mix it up under the boards is, you know, certainly as far from kind of the soft Euro stereotype to the extent that ever had any currency as you could get. So that was, you know, that was positive. The speed of the game seemed a little much for him. You could see there's skill there. It was the game was coming a little too fast for him to really let click in as much as he might have liked.
Yeah, I think as a center, he can become really effective.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he has the most amazing instincts or necessarily lateral quickness if you're talking about a four. Especially if he has to guard guys out of the three-point line, getting back to where he can contest at the rim and still close out on people, I don't think he's going to have that level of speed. I also don't think that he's going to be effective facing up and putting the ball on the floor. I think that's going to be too slow. The help will be able to get there. I mean, he had a couple of drives that people were pointing to, but those are pretty awkward and slow to me. I was not really impressed by those. But at center, I mean, obviously he had to start at center, because, you know, he's 7'3". I mean, you're starting at 7'3" at center on your summer league team. But, you know, I think it's encouraging that he has said he wants to play center. His shooting will be much more of a weapon at center, and he definitely has the length. I mean, he had some nice verticality plays. He kind of was able to improve in guarding Jahlil Okafor in the post, get a couple of blocks on him, although Okafor also lit him up a little bit too at times. So I do think that as a center, he may not be kind of a superstar player, but he could be a very, very effective starter. At power forward, I worry about him a little bit more. And the fact that we have to be a center then means he might even be a little bit further away just from a strength standpoint. But if he's playing center on bench units, he might do a little better. The defensive rebounding also will be an issue if he's playing at center. But, you know, what's your take on that? I mean, you think is center his position or is power forward?
I think you're right that long term, probably the five is his is where he's going to end up, and you know, I think his ceiling might actually be a little higher than you do. I mean, I think we were talking kind of towards the end of the week, and this is towards the end of the week, so all of our brains were fried. So, but we're talking about, you know, if just based on what we'd seen at Summer League, you know, what the draft order would be, and the consensus was he'd be about third, from all the.
What'd you guys come up with?
It was Towns, Moutier, then him were kind of our top three, and then after that we had some thinking to do.
Yeah.
So no,
I mean, how is he gonna score at a rate to really be a big star, in your opinion?
If you really think if he has that potential, that's what I don't necessarily see as his potential is. I don't think he has that many moves. He has nice touch, but I don't see him being able to beat guys one-on-one, you know, unless he just gets way, way, way stronger than he already is, probably more so than he really can. I don't see him being able to do that. I do think that a center who can block shots and can make threes at a high rate is someone who can be a very valuable player, but not necessarily a superstar.
And I think that there's that, and then if he adds a little bit, you know, that's the easy and obvious comparison is to Dirk, but just in terms of the style of a guy who is 7'3", and if he gets just that little bit of an edge on you, then gets, you know, one dribble, rise up over someone from about 8 feet.
He's so much slower than Dirk is, and has so much worse feel to me. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I can't stand that comparison, and because Dirk was just so incredibly agile and had such good feel. I mean, even as a guy who could operate off the dribble, who could grab and go full court, I mean, that's never going to be.
No, that's those aren't the skills I'm kind of envisioning. Just kind of, you know, he catches the ball off a drive and kick, and a guy is just a little bit out of position, takes one dribble, rises up, and you know, shoots a short jump shot. You know, he's 7'3". He doesn't need that much space to get it off, and it's not.
He definitely can get a shot off.
Yeah,
that's off a closeout type of situation. As long as somebody's not able to get their body on him and kind of knock him off of his shot a little bit, I agree with you. I mean, he can get a shot off, that's for sure.
And so there's, you know, maybe not a guy you throw the ball and say do something, but a guy who can finish plays off of others, you know, in sort of unorthodox ways is the route that he would have to take to become like a real star.
30 seconds on Jerian Grant.
Out of control?
Or 15 seconds.
Yeah, no, like to go to the basket, ended up caught in the air a lot. You know, played really hard, but you wonder about the decision-making, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great jump off of 1 foot. He will try and go in and dunk on you off of 1 foot, but not someone who particularly popped me at all. I mean, that's a lot of what I'm kind of looking for in Summer League is I want to see those wow plays. Didn't really, other than when he was able to get an opening and get to the basket and try and dunk, I didn't see a ton of that, but you know, it didn't look bad, I would say. I mean, just sort of looked like about kind of what you might have expected.
And again, you can't, you know, where he was picked, you don't necessarily expect like the wow. You just, he didn't do anything that made you think, ooh, that's not going to work. Just not anything that says, wow, what a steal.
Langston Galloway, again, we'll keep it quick on him, too. A little disappointing for me for a guy who was in the rotation, granted, on a horrible Knicks team last year that they're talking about as maybe being kind of a foundation, or, I mean, not a foundation, someone who can be in the rotation for them going forward when they're good again. Didn't see much of him.
No, and it is hard for me just because he's wearing number 2 and physically just has a slight resemblance to Ray Felton. So that kind of, I was kind of, no, just in terms of like, you know, from a distance.
He's got the good face too, right? Like, like that old baseball scouting cliche. Like, but yeah, no, I know what you mean. I kind of saw it.
Yeah, and why is Ray Felton here and he's not on the Knicks anymore? Oh, wait, that's not. It's Langston Galloway, and that's never a comparison you want to have made, I think.
All right, let's get to Philly. Jahlil Okafor, I'm guessing because you kind of dropped him a little bit in your redraft that you are not as much of a believer in him. I actually thought he had a pretty decent summer league, but I'll let you speak to it first.
he's just, he, you know, the everything people say about, you know, just the foot speed and stuff like that, you worry about. Now,
what do people say about the foot speed?
Well, it's just that it's bad, and you wonder how he's going to defend in the pick and roll, and how, if he can protect the rim and do all the defensive things, and, you know, how modern of a player is he? And, you know, there's a lot of things he does on, if he you know, progresses on offense, then maybe, okay, well, he doesn't do everything great defensively, but he's so good offensively in a way no one else is that will live with it. You know, you wonder about that. He bullied some people at times, and at other times he kind of, one thing that I really didn't like was how easily he let himself get pushed to, like, you know, catch the ball in the quote post at like 13 to 15 feet or something like that.
Yeah, that's the most disappointing thing about him. He's gonna have to get better at that, yeah. For sure. I totally agree with you on that part.
And the other thing is, and this is, I'll you know, give the benefit of the doubt and say that, you know, especially for big guys, conditioning is a problem at summer league, just because, you know, they're having to change ends faster than they're used to and twice as often as they're used to. But so maybe it's a conditioning thing, but there's also, this was something I saw watching on TV from Orlando, and something in person in Vegas that was concerning to me, was the turn and run was much faster going to
Utah. You mean Utah?
Yeah, Utah. Thank you.
People in Utah,
yeah, thank you. But the turn and run was faster going one direction than the other, if that makes sense. It was a little more, yeah. Get up and go going. The court was tilted towards the offensive side a little bit in terms of his transition play.
Yeah.
And that's so not great.
Let me address the defense first. I watched a ton of film of him defensively. And while I was rather, and this is at Duke, I'm saying before the draft, while I was rather horrified at his overall performance, I actually believe that he has the tools. I think that he to be an average or maybe even slightly better defender, because I think he does actually have pretty quick feet. When he gets isolated against, he actually does okay. That's something that I'll look at a lot, especially in big guys, to kind of see, all right, yeah, maybe he doesn't have the nuances of pick and roll, but can he really move his feet? Can he at least anticipate where a guy is going in a one-on-one setting? And, you know, he's got the big body, and I thought he actually defended pretty well, maybe just because I was starting from such a low baseline of having seen him at Duke, but I was relatively impressed by that. I thought offensively, the free throw shooting is a problem. I still have some confidence that he can get that in order due to his touch and the fact that he kind of has some weird form issues, and that'll help make him more efficient. I mean, I do still think he has this awesome touch. I mean, he's able to palm the ball so easily. His hook shots, you know, he's got another 2-3 feet of range compared to most people on his kind of hook shots and floaters. You know, but yeah, I mean, he's going to have to get just a lot more competitive and angry with his post-up game, because it's really hard to be efficient in the NBA if you're just, you know, relying on kind of these skill moves. He's better at it than most people, but, you know, if you're shooting a 6-foot contested hook, you can't make a living solely on that. I mean, you can it's an important shot. You can use it to set up other shots, but he needs to have plays where he gets deep position. He did that at least a couple of times, which might have been the first two times of his entire career, and against the Lakers and Upshaw. But, you know, he's going to need to use his body and get some points with power rather than skill. But I think he can do that. One thing that you hit on that I really agree with is he's going to need to get into fantastic shape to really maximize. Whether he does that or not, I don't know, but I still think that he has good potential, and, you know, to me, he's still up there in the 2-3 range. You know, he and Moutier, I had him 2 and Moutier 3. I probably would stick with that even after seeing the summer league.
Yeah, no, and again, our kind of redraft was if you knew nothing about these guys, just summer league. So that's
gotcha. Okay, yeah, that is a fair thing to reiterate.
And so obviously knowing, you know, the kind of the pedigree of Okafor, like. There's reason for, you know, confidence in some of the things you're saying. It's just, you know, there's work to be done there, but it's doable work.
For Sacramento, Willie Cauley-Stein, obviously, I think both of us would have agreed they should have taken Moutier, despite the fact that he didn't work out there. I don't know if you agree, but I've been saying I don't think he's a great fit with Cousins. But,
you know, that said, I don't think that he's a bad player. I thought that he did about what I would have wanted to see from him in the summer league. What was your take?
He is a very large, very mobile human being. That's my bit, like almost frighteningly so. That's my biggest takeaway from him is like guys of his size shouldn't be able to move like that. Now, there's not necessarily a lot of kind of skill with the ball to go with that, but that's you know, it's a great base to build from, even if it, like the base is to become, you know, the obvious comparison is a Tyson Chandler type. That's a really good player if you can get that. I saw that. I mean, again, you know, even he, who is a very, you know, visibly at least very well conditioned guy, was struggling with kind of the up and down pace of the game a little bit. And that's pure conditioning and, you know, nothing necessarily that you can hold against a guy, you know, being exposed to kind of.
Yeah. And it's important to remember too, these guys, a lot of them, especially, you know, maybe Cauley-Stein maybe. And then, you know, especially once you get into the middle of the first round, you know, some of these guys have done 14 workouts in 14 different cities in like 20 days leading up to the draft. And then, you know, you have the draft, you're basically probably up all night, you're flying to a press conference in, you know, the city that you were drafted in, you're probably partying a little bit to like just relax, which, you know, that I don't begrudge anybody who just got drafted into the NBA and got guaranteed millions of dollars. And then you really, you know, have a couple of days of summer league practices and you have to jump right in. I mean, I think it's very clear that a lot of these guys are really exhausted. And so that's something always to keep in mind here, just kind of what they've been through as rookies who were just drafted.
Yeah, no, it's not intended as a, I mean, I think we saw it from everyone, even you know, Moutier guys who we both loved, I think, was, you know, just the pace of the professional game is just so much higher and the physicality so much more that if, you know, the first time you get exposed to that, it's, you know, it's kind of like, it's a little bit like leaving the gym into the outdoor, the well air conditioned gym into the Vegas afternoon. It's just like, whoa. and so, yeah, he, you know, at times he looked winded, but also like kept working through it. So that was a positive. I mean,
I didn't see anything troublesome out of him. I mean, you know, like I've said before, I think you kind of start off with like your Bayesian expectation of these guys, of like what they're supposed to be, what you think they will be. And, you know, sometimes they'll show you something that you didn't think you would see for good. Sometimes you had some bad worries about them and they can kind of be confirmed. You know, that was sort of the case for me with D'Angelo Russell, who we talked about the last time. But with Cauley-Stein, you know, I think, yeah, I basically saw exactly what he was supposed to be and what I thought he would be. I mean, the only kind of troublesome thing is that every once in a while he'll just inexplicably flub finishes. And he also didn't display any kind of shooting range outside of the immediate basket area. But that's kind of what we're expecting from him, right?
Yeah.
I'll talk about this briefly because he only played really one game, and that was at the Utah Summer League. But I was very impressed with what I saw from Dante Exum. Did you happen to watch that game, or should I just talk about it?
Go ahead.
So he looked much stronger. I mean, much like Marcus Smart, but, you know, probably times 10. Dante Exum was deservedly criticized for his lack of aggressiveness as a rookie. Even though he played a ton of minutes, he basically never penetrated the lane, wasn't able to really hit any two-point jumpers, you know, or really jumpers off the dribble, and, you know, was real weak, wasn't able to finish on the rare times when he did get to the lane. He did show elite vision, and he did show the ability to really lock down defensively, which is pretty amazing for a guy who is a 19-year-old point guard, but he does have the great tools and lateral quickness there. Before he sprained his ankle, and then he never really came back to summer league because he's going to be playing with the Australian national team afterwards, I thought he looked great. I mean, he was strong enough that he even knocked Marcus Smart, who's a tank, back a couple of times. They were matched up together. He blew past Smart and a triple threat a couple of other times, made a three off the dribble, made a couple of nice two-point jumpers, went in and tried to dunk on someone. He had a quote afterwards saying that he's going to try and go over people now instead of kind of going under them or around them, which I think is encouraging also. Looked a little bit more explosive on his one-foot attacks, and he still had the great vision. So he played a great game in that one game, and granted, it's only one game, but I think you can look at the fact that he was able to kind of do some of the things that we'd seen from him coming into the draft, but at a much lower level of competition, to at least start to flash that now. And it makes you feel a little bit better about what he can be going forward, because I know a lot of people were really worried that it just didn't seem like this guy did anything offensively when he was a rookie.
Yeah, he was. As a rookie, he was a little bit like Marcus Smart, and he turned into almost a spot up shooter when he was, billed as kind of a great mystery, but billed as kind of more of a slasher. And so, like getting to some of that kind of stuff is encouraging, especially if it possibly lets Utah move away from Trey Burke, I think, who hasn't really worked out yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the interesting thing for Utah this year is one of those guys going to at least mature into being a passable NBA starter? And, they didn't make any moves to add anybody. Now they're going to have a ton of cap space in 2016. But if they get to where they're contending, would they try and bring in at least a stopgap veteran who could then maybe transition into being Exum's backup? Or is one of those guys going to be good enough that they won't need to do that? Or will they not even be continuing to begin with? That'll be something to watch.
Well, to follow up on that, I think that they can almost – Hayward is good enough that they can they can do a little bit like what Houston maybe does sometimes or has done in the past sometimes, where you have kind of a defender shooter type at the quote point guard position, and then
but that guy still needs to be able to make shots, which neither of those guys did. I mean, they're getting just straight up below replacement level offensive production from those guys.
No, so but if
and that obviously can't continue this year.
So but I think Exum obviously has the potential to be that defender type. So then all of a sudden, if you're playing like him and Alec Burks as the two kind of guards, then all of a sudden that's kind of it's a very interesting defensive squad you have there. If Hayward can create enough and get enough kind of secondary creation from those two guys to make it work. Those guys with Gobert and Favors on the back line.
Alec Burks, Rodney Hood, both of those guys can operate to some extent off the dribble as well. Quickly on Trey Lyles, I didn't really see much either way on him that was much different from what he was advertised to be. He didn't really pop at all. I would have liked to have seen him at least get a couple of post touches and scored on there, which he didn't particularly, but. That's fine. I mean, I think he's ultimately going to be kind of more of a stretch floor or put the ball on the floor for one dribble type of guy than a post guy.
Yeah, I had a scout who I was sitting next to and I was talking to said something along the lines of, he looks good, but he's not actually doing anything. And I thought that was he's the kind of guy who intrigues you with the pieces. And, maybe he'll put them together, but there's been a lot of guys through the years who've kind of done that. And if there's ever been a player type that's consistently suckered me in to thinking they were going to be good when they ultimately turned out not to be, it's that. So you kind of see what the tools are, and it's just whether they ever actually can be brought to bear in a useful way.
Someone who might be somewhat, the opposite archetype, by the way, enjoy that segue. That's about as good as it gets on this program. Miles Turner with Indy. This whole thing about how he runs and that they're trying to fix that, that's gotten some attention. He did look better in that aspect in the Orlando Summer League, but, still kind of an ugly game. Doesn't really look like a natural player. But you look down and he was killing it.
Yeah, and if you want to go crazy with it, imagine if Roy Hibbert had a jump shot. Now that's going crazy with it, obviously. But that's
I think that's actually a very good comparison. Now, what Hibbert was able to do in the that 2013-14 season, I think it's going to be one of the better rim protecting seasons that we'll ever see. So, you know, I don't want to put him necessarily in that view yet. And, you know, he didn't really show much in the way of verticality, but he was able to, despite being kind of awkward, he's able to take a couple of steps and come and get your shot out of nowhere and block it. And the jump shot looks pure, able to get on the offensive glass a little bit. But I think he kind of, he sort of plays in like a very small box when he has the ball. You know, he's not able to put the ball on the floor, really, you know, go side to side. He'll either kind of catch the ball and he has to go up right there. Same thing with his post-ups. It's all a turnaround jump shot, which he actually made at a very nice rate, you know, or even a hook shot if he gets the ball closer. So not someone who can really attack the basket much. I don't think he's going to be a great roll man rolling to the basket, but he will be a nice pop guy, and he showed NBA three-point range very well even at the age that he is. So I think, you know, like we were talking about with Porzingis, as a guy who can – block some shots and shoot three-pointers and hold up defensively as a center, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, and I think he's closer to being ready to contribute just from the physical side than Porzingis is. Would you?
Yeah, no, he's like 250. So, he's got to get stronger. I think that everybody does, but just from a weight standpoint, I think he's pretty much ready to
go.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he's, given some of the way that the Indy front court is unsettled, do you think he can get some rotation minutes this year?
I would be surprised if he didn't at this point.
You never know, though. When's the last rookie big man who could play any defense, right? I mean, yeah, he blocked some shots in this Orlando Summer League. There's always a lot less spacing in Summer League. So we'll see whether he's able to execute the system or not. But he is a talented guy, certainly the most talented of any of the relative flotsam big men that they have at this point on that roster. So, yeah, I mean, maybe we will see him play a little bit, and he could be a guy who at the very least is very efficient. I could see him having a pretty good PER this year, for example, even if he's not that great executing defensively.
Small sample size theater, PER monster type guy.
So another one of those guys who look great in these statistical translations and at a decent summer league, averaged about 15 points, was Frank Kaminsky out of Charlotte. They really were playing him at the four, mostly in a face-up role. His jump shot looked good. He looks to have sped up his release even more than he had. I think that's going to be a weapon for him. Still not buying him as a four from an athletic standpoint, though.
I think that Porzingis has a better shot of guarding at the four in the NBA than Kaminsky does. Is it too far?
Well, I'm trying to think of that. I think Porzingis, Kaminsky actually has the ability to do more stuff off the dribble than Porzingis.
No, I'm saying, but to defend as a four.
Well, that's probably true, just because Porzingis at least has the length to bother people, which Kaminsky just doesn't. I mean, I think he's going to be a guy defensively. If you're a guy defensively who can't make the offensive player uncomfortable, if you can't surprise him either with the way you're able to contest, getting a bump on him when it's not expected, just staying with him in a way that isn't expected. If I'm an offensive player against Kaminsky, well, not me, but if I'm an NBA player against Kaminsky, you're not worried that he's going to block your shot. You know you can get your shot against him. And with that being the case, I agree. I mean, I think maybe just because Porzingis has that length, you're right, but I don't like either of them really defending the four. I think that a lot of Kaminsky's game is this dribble stuff. I don't think that's really going to work against real NBA fours. I also think that he's another one of these guys where you can just go small against him and it's not really going to be a huge issue. Maybe he could post up, but if they're going to have Al Jefferson on the floor with them, there's not going to be a ton of space to do that anyway. And I think that, you know, a small guy can do a lot more against Kaminsky at the other end, and Kaminsky's post-ups are going to hurt that guy. So, yeah, I mean, it was disappointing to me a little bit that he's trying to do the whole slim down, stretch four thing, basically the same thing Cody Zeller did 2 years ago. And I think he could be much better as a center where his shooting can really stretch the floor. So we'll see with him. I mean, I think he had an encouraging summer league. You know, I feel a little bit better about him than I did beforehand. He looked a little bit quicker. His shot looked good, but still, I just wonder about him being a four-man.
He didn't show anything that belies kind of the Charlotte watched the tournament and liked him kind of meme about that. And that's,
well, I wouldn't be that flippant about it because he had a great senior year.
Yeah, I know. No,
and even a good tournament his junior year too. So don't forget that. So I mean, you know, and a lot of the statistical translations that I saw rated him highly. So it's not just that, but yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be some world beater. Certainly not good enough to turn down that reported treasure trove that Boston was offering.
No, I don't. And I think there's been a lot of pushback from the Zach Lowe article, because there are some quotes in there that made them look almost unprepared, which is never
good look. Yeah, no, that was BS though. Like the full quote, yeah. at least what Zach said. You know, that whole thing kind of struck me a little bit as a little bit of CYA from some of the lower guys in the organization, where they may have been trying to make themselves look a little bit like, all right, you know, this is Michael's call. I don't know whether we agreed with it or not. You know, it kind of smacked of that a little bit. You know, I mean, I don't think they were saying, yeah, well, there's just no way that we like could have been ready to draft guys in the teens. I don't think that's what it was really the case. I mean, these guys get paid to do their homework on these guys, and they have a ton of them even in Charlotte. So that would shock me if they weren't actually prepared to draft guys in the teens.
I don't disagree with you. But
I mean, for those who didn't read that article, and if you didn't, why haven't you? Because you should read everything that Zach Lowe writes. But there was a quote saying, well, you know, it's a little difficult to trade down because it's not necessarily a range of guys that we would have been considering. But then Zach said, yeah, no, clearly they were ready and did their homework. So, all right, let's do a couple more. I think we're pretty close to getting everyone I wanted to. The Orlando guys, Aaron Gordon, maybe he would be right up there again among the most impressive second year guys. Jump shot looked good. One big difference for him from last year's summer league was he was playing at the four, which is where he should be playing pretty much all the time, in my opinion. And he looked great.
Yeah.
Well, he probably doesn't look great
exactly
now.
Yeah, broke his jaw.
Drew Gordon broke his jaw, but back in early July, he looked great.
Yeah. No. He's a big reason why I am huge on Orlando this year. I think they're going
to
be
really.
Yeah.
That's interesting. We'll have to. We'll have to talk about that when it comes to season preview time.
I was basically on the verge, not knowing if he's going to be back and what kind of shape he's going to be in and stuff like that for the start of the season, like dampens my enthusiasm a little bit, but I was basically.
I think he'll be fine, but broken jaw, I think, you know.
But you worry about, you know, his ability to, you know, maintain a good diet and stuff like that, but just because you can't eat a lot of meat.
I don't think they do the whole, like, jaw wired shut from the 1950s thing.
It's not like in The Godfather where Michael is walking around with the shiner for 3 months and.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going too far afield here. I do not have much expertise in treatment of broken jaws, but how much of what he did do you think is translatable to the NBA game?
Yes. I mean, I think a four-man who can step out and hit jump shots and then run all over the court defending and get back in time to use tremendous length and athleticism to protect the rim. Yes, that translates. I was high on him last year, and I am no less high on him this year, especially, you know, having, you know, I wouldn't say fixed, but at least addressed, began to address kind of the one, you know, big lack in his game. And especially if they're actually going to play him at the four. And I think part of, you know, letting Kylo Quinn go is to, you know, open up some big rotation minutes for that to happen, you know, and whether you call him the three and Tobias Harris the four or vice versa, doesn't really matter. Cause he can, you know, do some, you know, this is going to sound hyperbolic, but can do some Serge Ibaka things. You know, not at that level. I think Ibaka is a borderline defensive player of the year kind of player. So I'm not predicting that from him, but that's.
Yeah, and he's going to struggle to hold up in the post. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to see him necessarily defending like a Blake Griffin type.
Yeah.
He's a LaMarcus Aldridge in the post.
He's a big guy, though. too. I mean, he's going to fill out some a little bit, but he was walking around the gym a little bit in Vegas, and he's not a scrawny guy, put it that way.
The most encouraging thing for me about his performance his rookie year, and he kind of fell off the radar after he had that foot injury early on, and then, you know, people had kind of stopped paying attention to Orlando because they're out of contention but granted, he only shot 61 free throws all year, but he shot 72%, and for a guy who was basically under 50% in college, that 72% from the line makes you feel like, all right, he has a chance at getting his jump shot to where it needs to be. And I would love to see an Orlando lineup with Payton, Oladipo, Harris, Gordon, and then Channing Frye. I think that could be a really, really interesting lineup. I do think that Vucevic may not kind of fit in with the style the rest of the way that they want to play. If they could just get a guy who is bouncy and could protect the rim to run with those first four guys that I named, that would be awesome defensively. Or you have Frye as a center. His shooting is much more useful as a center. I really like that lineup. I guess we're getting a little bit far away from just talking about the prospects, but yeah, I agree. I thought Gordon looked good. He looked good operating off the dribble, but so much of that is facilitated by him working at the four to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, he has just a tremendous speed and quickness advantage at the four that allows him to kind of beat people off the dribble, where he could do it at the three, just not as well. And he would need to just be a better ball handler for that to be, you know, a consistent thing at the three.
Yeah, and they could also throw Hazonia into that lineup as well. If they are running out a Frye and Vucevic front court, or if Jason Smith is getting any time at all, I'm going to be pretty disappointed in Skiles this year.
I think, to finish up on this, I think that Skiles is a good coach, and the reaction to him being hired, which was kind of, I think that's much more to do with the fact that he's kind of taciturn and comes across as kind of a jerk. Whereas, you know, if you look at track record, you know,
it's amazing how people like dislike jerks. It's,
well, no, but I mean,
and I'm not even saying that about Skiles. I don't know him personally, but you know, I guess that he does sort of come off that as a bit of a taskmaster, disciplinarian type.
Sure, but when you talk about, you know, the coaches who got hired, people who are crazy about it, is like Alvin Gentry is, you know, and no disrespect intended to Gentry, but he's everybody's buddy, so of course, you know, New Orleans is saved, but Skiles, I has, you know, just as much, if not more, kind of pedigree as a coach, and it's just, it's interesting the way that we kind of from the outside evaluate coaching kind of on that kind of, you know, who I'd like to hang out with kind of metric.
I disagree with that. I think Alvin Gentry has a better pedigree as a coach than Skiles. I thought that the job that Gentry did with that 2010 Suns team is well above anything that Skiles has necessarily done. I mean, Skiles didn't have that level of talent necessarily. And then also just what Gentry's been able to do as an assistant as well, I think, has been very good. So I would say that I like Gentry a little bit better, and I feel like he has a little bit better resume, especially recently. But, you know, I do feel like maybe people are sleeping on Skiles a little bit. I'm coming around. I'm in a little more. I sort of was in the feeling about him initially when he was hired. But, you know, we'll see how he does. Maybe he will get this team to be an elite-level defense early on, and then he's certainly worth the hire. How about Hazonia? He was about what I thought he was going to be. Would you agree with that?
He's not shy. No, I think that the pre-draft comparison of kind of what he was kind of a J.R. Smith, and that's kind of,
yeah,
that's pretty, seems pretty spot on. And
yeah, I would like to see a little bit more of him operating in the pick and roll, at least kind of being a threat in the mid range. More, I mean, he's kind of get all the way to the rim or like pull up for the three, which, you know, obviously those are the most efficient areas, but to really be an excellent scorer, you've got to have at least some sort of a threat from mid range. But he's a pretty young guy. I mean, I think he, with his physical talent, the fact that he's played at a high level in Europe, he could get some minutes. They need the shooting pretty badly. on the wing. So, yeah, I mean, he was another guy who, about what I expected him to be based on the film that I'd watched going in and what his reputation was, but, you know, didn't particularly impress or depress based on what I saw from Orlando about where I thought.
Yeah, and like his standout attribute is his swagger. That's the kind of thing that if it's a plus factor, it's a big plus factor. If it's a minus, it's a big minus. And we won't know which until we kind of see what the rest of his game can do. It's kind of almost a multiplier on his game.
So we've been going on for quite a while now. I'll leave the floor to you. Is there anyone else we haven't talked about that you were particularly impressed by or that you're particularly worried by?
I forget. Did we get to Toronto last time?
No, we didn't.
I mean, you got to talk about Norman Powell as a guy who was you know, athletic.
How is he getting his points, for the people who may not have watched? Because what did he average, like 18 a game or something?
I mean, he's getting into the lane and finishing a fair amount, if I recall. It was so long ago, I don't remember those kind of details.
Well, good. I'm glad I have you on the podcast. You remember enough details to talk about this for an hour and 15 minutes.
The thing that stood out was kind of his kind of just athleticism and ability to play. Just, you know, we talked about, Rozier not being able to necessarily play up. Powell seemed like, even though kind of similar size, seemed like he had that extra little bit of oomph that, you know, if you play him at the two, he's quote undersized for the two, but he's going to be fine there just because he's got so much kind of length and bounce and strength to him. And so that was, you know, and just the kind of the competitiveness, we're all very impressive. And, you know, for a guy, you know, you talked earlier about wanting to see guys pop. Well, a guy picked in the 40s who pops, you like to see that.
Yeah, he just turned 22 right before the draft. He's only 6'4 in shoes, but he has a 6'11 wingspan, and he's got quite a bit of bounce to him, too. So he's and pretty strong, weighs in, you know, 215, 220. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's someone who could guard the position. Another guy in what's hoped to be for Masai Ujiri, a defensive renaissance on the perimeter for the Raptors. And I don't think he's going to be a guy who has the ball in his hands a ton, but someone who can get out and transition and get some dunks and layups, get some steals. To me, the big thing about whether he's really going to be able to play or not is going to be his three-point shooting, which has kind of waxed and waned throughout his career at UCLA. I mean, even in his senior year, he only shot 32% from the college line, and that was on three attempts per game, so not even a ton of attempts in college. So, granted, he played well, but I don't think he's going to be someone who's going to be dribbling a ton with the ball in his hands inside the arc to some of the other offensive talent they have, at least not early in his career. So it's going to come down to getting out in transition and hitting that three to really get the playing time. I'm not convinced that he's there yet, but certainly had absolutely as encouraging a summer league as you could have hoped, given where he was drafted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree with all that. And, you know, the thing you say about his jump shot is it's not – And again, I'm not as familiar with these guys coming out of college.
It doesn't look broken
at
all.
No, exactly.
Right?
And from people who, you know, watched him in college, it looks improved from college is what they have said. So that's a positive sign. And the Raps are, you know, very high on him. So that's, you know, I think he's already signed a multi-year deal guaranteed, I believe. So he's going to get a chance, I think.
How about Bebe? What did you think of him? I mean, he actually was able to get on the glass pretty well. And that Toronto team looked like they're going to be pretty good until they kind of got derailed. And do you think he maybe not quite there yet? This was his rookie year. But someone who has some physical tools, at least he's got the 7'5 wingspan and was able to rebound well enough despite that thin body.
I don't know if he can move well enough to ever be a big minute guy. That's my big concern.
Yeah, he's kind of clunky a little bit, isn't he?
That's my big concern for him would be, especially like moving laterally, whether he's ever going to be able to
like not a guy who's getting into a stance anytime.
No, and and, you know, he's going to get, I think he's going to get opportunities there just because they don't, you know, aside from Valanciunas, they don't have anyone who, you know, you could really call a center on their roster, unless they're going to try to get like spot minutes from Scola at the center, which is I think it's a defensive disaster waiting to happen. So I think he's probably going to get a look this year, but I don't know exactly how much to expect from him. I think, you know, if they get kind of competence, 10 to 15 minutes of rebounding.
That would be a great result for a guy who played like zero at all last year. He did show off a decent mid-range jumper. Scoring-wise, he basically, unless he's catching an alley-oop on a pick-and-roll, is pretty useless. Like, he'll catch the ball around the basket, and, you know, if he has a body on him, he's just not really able to go up at all. Did you notice
that?
So I think offensively, he's probably going to be a pretty big liability. Maybe defensively, he can get there ultimately, and I think at least his rebounding was encouraging. So, I feel better about him than I did before the summer league when he was essentially a non-entity. A good productive summer league from him, at least if it doesn't augur that he's going to be some big force for them this year.
Sure. And I think the other guy to talk to about them is Bruno, right?
Yeah. Why don't we end on him?
Sure.
I was a little disappointed by him. What do you think?
I was a little bit too. I was kind of expecting more kind of
growth. He didn't really do anything other than shoot threes.
Well, I think I would have been more okay with it if all he'd done was shoot threes. Because when he tried to do other things, it didn't really go very well. His handle is loose, to be generous. So anytime he put the ball on the floor, it was very much an adventure. He's got he's got length for days and just a beautiful jump shot. And so, you know, from there, that kind of illustrates kind of one path to being a productive NBA player. And maybe summer league is a good time for him to try to work on expanding the other parts. But those other parts are just nowhere near close to being ready for prime time. I don't think he's close to playable as a guy who basically should not be allowed to dribble. Unless he really grasps the kind of defensive concepts this year, which, considering that he's known English for a year, asking a lot, I think. So, I mean, is he now 1 year away from being 2 years away?
That was the joke that I made at some point on this podcast. Didn't we make that joke on the one that we did in the hotel room?
I thought that the 2 years away from being 2 years away was harsh at the time, and I still think it is. But I think
how dare you steal my stealing of Francisco's jokes? Yes.
he doesn't have any bounce to him at all, huh?
I saw him one time where he looked like he had it, and then another time where maybe he didn't. And so maybe again, we're talking about kind of the conditioning thing where, a bunch of games back to back playing more minutes than maybe he's used to, and maybe some fatigue at times, and maybe kind of almost a mental fatigue of trying to push his game in ways that it's not ready for yet. If I'm going to be a glass half full.
I was hopeful to see him pop and to see some wild plays out of him. And I didn't see that, unfortunately. And as a guy who was drafted nearly entirely on physical potential, I think a lot of people might have thought of him as kind of a Giannis-like pick when he was drafted, and he is nowhere near those type of physical tools. He's certainly improving. He still has a 7'7" wingspan. The fact that he can shoot the NBA 3 pretty well, that means something. I mean, if he becomes a guy who can defend his position and shoot the NBA 3, then that's he could still be a decent player, as we've noted a myriad times. Guys who can play D and shoot threes are actually not as common as you think that they are. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the idea of him as some huge high upside potential guy is starting to fall by the wayside for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think there would have to be just a massive improvement in his ball handling skills for that, for him to ever be, you know, move into kind of a wing creator type of role with any degree of success. And, you know, he's still young and that could happen, but it's, you know, every year that passes, it just becomes very much less likely.
Really quickly, I'll just talk about, I thought Justin Anderson had a very nice summer league. You know, I think he really has a great NBA body at this point. I don't know whether to believe in his shooting yet. He made his threes at a high rate, but he's got a little bit of a funky release. It doesn't get a ton of arc, and his makes, you know, are not, at least in the summer league, were not kind of pure right through makes. A lot of kind of around the rim a little bit, you know, low trajectory kind of shots. So I'm not sure whether to trust his shooting. But if his shooting does become a real thing, you know, if he's over 35% on threes, I really like the rest of his game to round out. So, you know, he's someone who definitely, when you talk about what were your expectations, he certainly was one who exceeded them.
Yeah, and I think that the Mavs allowing Richard Jefferson to decommit and then sign with Cleveland, I think probably had a lot to do with them being happy with what they saw with Anderson as a guy who can maybe, you know, the dread come in and play right away. But he was among the older guys taking away.
He was a junior. He's got that NBA body. It's a lot less far-fetched for him than it is for a lot of these other guys.
Yeah. No, I would. He also, I mean, his competitiveness and kind of bounce defensively was noticeable at times too, and so that was kind of the first time he caught my eye was, I think he had an enormous erasure block on somebody's dunk attempt pretty early in the week. So.
Oh yeah, I forget who that was, but yeah, that was actually pretty nice. All right, real quickly, no elaboration. One guy who impressed you was better than you thought he would be. That we haven't talked about yet.
I
got one if you want to.
I didn't hate what I saw from Kevin Looney.
You really are just like the master of high praise. No, I agree with you. I was always kind of high in him. I was surprised that he fell about as low as he did. He actually was about what I expected, I'll be honest. But I had high hopes for him, going back to when I first saw him 2 years ago. So he did what I thought he would do.
Actually, you know what? I'll say one guy who did some things that I liked, and he got rewarded with a contract that then we then argued about was Scotty Wilbekin. For Philly, I thought he did really well and looked, you know, every inch of kind of an NBA level, though probably not a starting level, but an NBA level point guard. So that's a guy I'll say that I did like what I saw from him and wasn't necessarily sure that I would.
Brandon Dawson was the guy for me for the Clippers. I think he was a 56th pick, and he showed some nice pop. He's always a guy I liked at Michigan State the few times that I would see him, and you know, definitely an NBA level athlete for sure. The question for him will be, you know, can he hit a standstill three? But with the 56th pick, especially because I kind of like guys who played at a big position who are smaller in college sometimes, as long as they can be taught to shoot threes, because those guys are the guys who are going to give you something in the floor game. They're tough. They're competitive. They can switch on to guys. I mean, just that they have that kind of Draymond Green, like, I'm not going to get outworked ethos, even if they are smaller. He kind of comes from that same school, literally. And, I think he's someone, great risk at number 56. And if he can start to make NBA threes at even a decent rate, he's someone who could ultimately be a rotation player. So good risk there, and I think he was someone who popped out quite a bit at the Orlando Summer League for me. All right, why don't you talk real quick. You talked about the rim protector one. You also did that assist piece, right?
Yeah, so this is something I've been thinking about for a while, is kind of, we have done a lot of work kind of in general, we being kind of the statistical community, on kind of the relationship between usage and efficiency for shooting. And I've been trying to figure out a way to do something similar for passing. And so, you know, it's not perfect, but we have some data on, you know, quote, potential assists guys get. So we can say, all right, this guy's passes lead to people making shots at this rate. Plus, we know a little bit about how they're turning the ball over, whether it's a bad pass turnover or a charge or lost the ball out of bounds or something like that. So kind of comparing guys' assists and bad passes to each other and their assist chances and the buckets people made off of them, kind of an analog to you know, shooting usage and efficiency, came up with playmaking usage and efficiency and playmaking turnover rates. And that kind of led to some interesting conclusions. Not surprisingly, Chris Paul is amazing. Kind of, you know, it's second highest, I think, to John Wall in playmaking usage among high usage players. The lowest playmaking turnover rate, top 10 in kind of the efficiency off of his shots, and that's something that, you know, generally speaking, big men had, you know, their passes led to higher efficiency shots just because they were throwing fewer passes to mid-range shots. So to have a guard be that high in that rate, even at a high rate of finding people. So, and other things is, you know, Blake Griffin also showed up, unsurprisingly, I think, very well. And Josh Smith remains controversial because his passing finds high value shots, but he also turns the ball over a ton. So that was kind of because, you know, for every good thing Josh Smith does, he has to do, you know, at least portion of a bad thing so that people have something to argue about.
That makes sense. You know, it was the big man assisting thing that I sort of kicked myself for not realizing was the case. And I'm glad you did that, because that makes intuitive sense, right? If you're a big guy and you're making a pass, it's usually A, you're getting double teamed in the post. B, you're getting the ball on the pick and roll in an advantage situation where you got a scrambling defense. So a lot of times you're going to make a pass either to a guy who's right under the hoop or a guy who's out at the 3-point line. And a lot of times when those guys catch the ball in a position where they're going to be making a pass, they kind of already are in a mid-range area, even if they do have an advantage. So they're kind of taking that space up. It makes sense then that their passes would be to either the rim or the 3-point line, which are the higher value areas anyway.
Yep, and it's not a huge difference, but it's enough of a difference that it obviously shows up in kind of an efficiency rate style statistic. So that means that a guy like, you know, a big man who's a good passer who plays with good shooters is going to show up really high, and among guys with, you know, minimum qualifying passing attempts, the guy who would pass to the highest, you know, effective field goal percentage shooting was Al Horford, which, you know, I don't think should be a surprise at all, considering, you know, the offense he played in, and he's a good passer and all that. I was glad to figure out a way to estimate that better. There's still ways to improve it. There's kind of some underlying data which isn't public yet that if I got my hands on, I could make it even better. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. And the people who gather the data have to make a living too, and I understand that, and I'm happy for the amount that they make public.
All right, then. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks to our listeners. You can follow Seth on Twitter, Seth Partnow, PERTNOW. Always doing great analytics work, especially now during the downtime in the off season. I think we'll probably see a lot more stuff from him. And you'll probably see a lot more kind of longer podcasts from me going forward, a little bit more abstract since we're in the off season. We'll be sticking to this twice a week schedule or so, but maybe give you a little bit of longer podcast at least to make it through your gardening or lawn mowing. We had a listener on Twitter actually said the other day that his neighbors weren't getting their lawn mowed because he didn't have the podcast listened to, which I thought was pretty funny. And now, you know, we come out with a new podcast that hopefully his neighbors will get their lawns mowed again. So
please give us a rating too on iTunes if you haven't. That actually has been really helpful for us. We're actually moving into getting some sponsors. We're going to have a sponsor introduced next week, hopefully. And we also will endeavor to improve the audio quality as well. We'll talk to you a little bit more about that next time. You can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanMBA. And that is the end of our ramblings for today. Thanks for joining us, Seth, and we'll talk to you later.